But anyway, Proverbs is always a great study. What are some of your favorite proverbs? Let me just throw that out. There's lots of great proverbs, and I know I'm just throwing that out, and you weren't ready for the question, but what are some of your favorite proverbs? You don't have to quote them in full, but Ron?
One gift part of your sign, 9:10.
Which is?
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding.
Okay, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And of course, in chapter 1, it's similar to that. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. In chapter 9, verse 10, the beginning of wisdom. Anybody else? Brother Chuck?
Proverbs 21:23. Whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from trouble.
Great. There's a lot of great ones on the tongue, aren't there? I need those badly. Anyone else? Susan?
Proverbs 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, and a grievous word stirs up anger.
Yes, gentle answer turns away wrath. Joan?
One of my all-time favorites in the entire Bible is Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path.
Good, very good. Very good. That's on my list too. Anyone else want to share? Gloria.
Proverbs 30:89.
Okay. You want to read that for us, or I couldn't quite hear you. Did you say 30?
Okay, you had this in some sermon that you had done. Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Okay. Be with me food convenient for me, lest I be fooled and deny thee, and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal, and take the name of my God in vain.
Very good. Yes, very good. A lot of good ones, aren't there? Proverbs 16, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. Proverbs 18:22, he who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. 22:1, a good name is to be more desired than great riches. 6:6, one of the famous, maybe one of the most famous ones. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. That just goes on and on and on. Well, what is a proverb? He talks about what a proverb is. He doesn't go into great detail. Carol, in page 3 of our outline, he says, simply stated, proverbs are sayings or sentences of ethical wisdom. And that's a short, succinct definition. Simply stated, proverbs are sayings or sentences of ethical wisdom. English Dictionary, Random House, says a short, popular saying that expresses effectively some commonplace truth or useful thought. Edward J. Young defines this Hebrew word, the mashal. I'm not sure the pronunciation of the Hebrew term. M-A-S-H-A-L is the transliteration. A brief, pithy saying which expresses wisdom. It is, he says, strictly speaking, a representation or comparison. Gleason L. Archer Jr. says something similar. A term for parable is mashal, which comes from the root idea of parallel or similar, and hence a description by way of comparison. And so it is a short, pithy saying. Sometimes we just say a proverb is a short, pithy saying. But it is a saying that expresses, as our author said, some ethical wisdom. So we have Bible proverbs. We have other proverbs. We have modern proverbs. What are some modern proverbs that we have? Again, you weren't prepared for this question, but can anybody think of modern proverbs we have? Like a stitch in time saves nine is a proverb. A penny saved is a penny earned. Good. It's still not worth anything these days. Maybe you should say a dollar saved is a dollar earned.
A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Anybody else have wisdom for us this morning?
The Amish has one.
What's that?
The hurrier I go, the behinder I get.
That's good. Again?
The older the violin, the sweeter the music.
I saw one online, a foreign proverb, to lengthen your life, shorten your meals. That's pretty good, isn't it? He that lies down with the dog shall rise up with fleas. Too often, a clear conscience is merely a result of a bad memory. There was some foreign proverbs, a Japanese proverb, fall down seven times, stand up eight. In other words, keep getting up, keep trying. Swedish proverb, shared joy is double joy, shared sorrow is half a sorrow. I like that one. That's good, isn't it? Yiddish proverb, words should be weighed, not counted. I think that's a preacher proverb. It's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. Chinese proverb. So proverbs. We know that they're around us in culture. We hear them now. But what's the difference? What's the difference in God's wisdom, God's proverbs, and man's proverbs? Ron?
God's proverbs are inspired.
God's proverbs are inspired, and that makes them true, doesn't it? Now, sometimes man's proverbs, just these that we see, fall down seven times, stand up eight, and statements like that about perseverance or about life. Sometimes they're funny, sometimes they're not, like to lengthen your life, shorten your meals, can be kind of funny, but also true. But those can come, we can, if we are observant about life, that's where these proverbs come from. People live life, they live long days, they observe things, they come to understand that people have a hard time pushing away from the table, and that excessive weight can lead to all kind of health problems. And so over the years, they come up with proverbs like that are generally true, right? But God's are always true. Sometimes men's are not true. Can you think of some proverbs that are not, sayings in our culture that are not true? That are common statements that are not true? Joan? Yeah. He who has the most toys at the end wins. I mean, that's the way people feel, don't they? Becky?
The grass is always greener on the other side.
Yeah, the grass is always greener on the other side. I can remember in the 60s, growing up in the 60s, kids would say, if it feels good, do it. You know? And so we have these sayings, these proverbs. Don't get mad, get even. Don't get mad, get even. There are proverbs out there in our society, and sometimes people take them seriously. They think they're true. People say things like, don't you disrespect me. You know, don't take any guff off of anyone. You get back in their face. They treat you bad, you get right back in their face. Well, that's the wisdom of the world. And those are proverbs of the world, but they're not true. And the difference, sometimes men's proverbs can be true and have truth in them, but sometimes they are not. God's proverbs are always true. So let's go to chapter 1. The purpose of the Proverbs is very well outlined for us in these first verses. So someone read for us. Who would like to read for us? Becky, would you read for me? Chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. Everybody follow along in your Bibles. What are you reading from?
The Literal Standard.
Oh, no. Can I call on somebody else? She downloaded this Literal Standard Bible, and I don't always like it. Okay, we'll see if we like it. Go ahead.
The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel, for knowing wisdom and instruction, for understanding sayings of intelligence, for receiving the instruction of wisdom, righteousness, judgment, and uprightness, for giving to simple ones prudence, to a youth knowledge and discretion. The wise hear and increase learning, and the intelligent obtains counsel. For understanding a proverb and its sweetness, words of the wise and their acute sayings.
Not bad. Not bad. For a change. We've been doing our readings together, and she reads from this Literal Standard Version, which is a new version, and some of it I don't care too much for, so we tease about it. Most of it's pretty good. That was pretty good. So the purpose of the Proverbs is outlined here, of course, in these verses. The purpose of the Proverbs is not just beauty of poetry, although there is some beautiful poetry. And the purpose of the Proverbs is not just entertainment, although some of the Proverbs can be entertaining. The purpose of it is wisdom, God's wisdom, right living, warnings. And so we see, and our author brings that out, but in these verses here, we see what the writer says, what Solomon begins with here when he says, to know wisdom and instruction. The American Standard says wisdom and instruction. To know, not just in the accumulation of knowledge, but to know for practice. The idea is to know that we may practice, that we may put it into application. I think our brother in his prayer this morning mentioned the application of these things so that we can live godly and wise life. The NIV says to attain, to know, to attain unto wisdom and instruction, that our lives may align with what God wants. We may have the impact on others that we need to have, that our lives will be such as to be godly examples to those who are around about us. Also in verse 2, to perceive. The second phrase in verse 2 says to discern, the American Standard, to perceive, to understand, words of insight. Verse 3, to receive instruction and wise behavior. We'll see over and over again, my son, listen to these words, receive these words. And so he writes that his son may receive these words, that all of us may receive these words for righteousness and justice, for fairness and equity, how to treat people, how to respond to God, how to live godly lives. Verse 4, to give prudence, the American Standard, to give prudence to the simple, to the naive. It doesn't mean, sometimes we use that term in the vernacular to simple, someone who has some mental limitations, to put it that way. But that's not what he's talking about. He's not talking about those who can't understand, who have some mental limitation. He's talking about those who are naive, those who haven't learned, those who need to know better. And so to give instruction, to give prudence, to give instruction to the naive, to the simple, and to the young man, verse 4, knowledge and discretion. And so knowledge to the simple, to those who haven't learned yet, to those who haven't matured yet, to those who haven't been able to accumulate the knowledge of these things yet, for whatever reason, or to the young who are still young and don't have the age of experience behind them yet, these things are for there and for their growth and for their knowledge. And then verse 5, what does he say in verse 5? Not only is this book, these proverbs, this instruction, this wisdom, not only is it for the simple and the naive, not only is it for the young, but who else is it for?
The wise man.
To the wise man.
Can the wise man learn more? I hope so. I hope so. The wise man can hear, not implying anything about myself there, but the wise man can also hear an increase in learning, that the man of understanding may attain unto sound counsels. We never stop growing. We never stop learning. And so those who have attained a certain level of wisdom, we need to understand, and we need to grow, we need to mature. And so to understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. In his outline then, after kind of beginning there, we see the purpose. The purpose of Proverbs is not just the accumulation of worldly wisdom, as far as the world is concerned, but God's wisdom. God's wisdom is always true. God's instructions, even when they're practical things like spare the rod and spoil the child, even when they're practical things like a soft answer turns away wrath, that's a practical application to us, but it's God's wisdom. It comes from God. And it may go against what the world says. The world may say, don't get mad, get even. But God's wisdom says a soft answer turns away wrath. And so we will do better, and we will grow more to maturity, and we will get along better in this life when we listen to God's wisdom than the wisdom of man. He says there in the first section, he kind of divides his lesson, if you look at the lesson, into three parts. One is, he calls it get focused, and I think he begins with a definition. He then goes to godly instruction versus sinful enticement. And then he goes to the failure of rejecting wisdom. So it's a pretty good way of outlining this first chapter. We see the introduction. Then we see godly instruction calls for the young man to receive godly instruction in a couple different passages here. And then he talks about being careful not to be enticed to sin. And then ends the chapter with talking about the failure of rejecting wisdom, the outcome, the consequences if we reject wisdom. So we'll try to hit the highlights and look at those. Now, he talks about getting focused, and that really touches already on these definitions or this understanding of what wisdom is. But he says in that section, God is the fountain from which all wisdom flows. And so that's what we need to understand. I like that phrase. God is the fountain from which all wisdom flows. And he emphasizes we have the ability to gain wisdom if we'll just listen to God. This is not rocket science, but it takes trusting, doesn't it? It takes humility, as with all of God's word. It takes humility to listen, to realize I don't know it all. And so I need to learn. I need to humble myself. I need to listen to what God's instructions are. And so it takes humility. Then it takes some time and effort to listen and willingness to listen. And then it takes a plan and a determination to apply and to use it in our lives. God is the fountain, but we have the ability to gain wisdom. We have the ability to know right from wrong. We have the ability to grow in these things. He refers in these comments to James chapter 1, verse 5. If any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. And so the New Testament talks about wisdom, the wisdom that is from above. James talks about that in his book, the wisdom that is from above. Listening again to God's wisdom. Turn over to chapter 4 for a moment. Let's read the first 7 verses, 4, 1 through 7. And we will get to these verses more. I don't want to hang here too long this morning, but it fits with what we're talking about. If you've looked at an outline, and I didn't say at the beginning, but our projector is still out. If I had the projector, I would throw up an outline for you so you can kind of see it yourself. We found out I don't think it's the projector itself. There's some other problem. But anyway, we hope to have an electrician look at that this week. But if we think about an outline of the book of Proverbs, if in your pre-study you looked. Basically, if I can find my correct page here, the outline that I looked at, it was a seven-part outline. Chapters 1 through 9 is a discourse on wisdom. Chapters 1 through 9 is a special section. It begins with this long discourse about wisdom. And so we'll see in these chapters as we go through them beautiful statements by the writer about God's wisdom and how valuable God's wisdom is and what God's wisdom is all about. And then in beginning in chapter 10, we will see the section that is what we typically think of as the Proverbs. And those are all one or two verse Proverbs, just short Proverbs. And one verse may not be the same topic as the next verse. And so just a set of a bunch of different, with no particular outline to them. And so we'll see that from chapter 10 through 22. And then at the end of the book, we see some words of the wise, author unknown. Those first 22 chapters are basically all Solomon. So the first 9 chapters is this discourse on wisdom. And then chapter 10 through 22 is basically individual proverbs on a variety of subjects. And then chapter 22 to 24 is words of the wise, whoever that is, the author is unknown. And then 24, the last part, more words of the wise, it says. And some separate that out just because of that heading, more words of the wise. And then 25 through 29 are proverbs of Solomon, which were collected by Hezekiah's men. And then chapter 30 is the words of Augur, and chapter 31 is the proverbs of King Lemuel as taught by his mother in the famous passage on the worthy woman. And so if we were going to outline, in a sense, the book, that's the way it would be outlined. But these first 9 chapters is this discourse on wisdom, this discussion of wisdom. So, having said that, chapter 4, let's just read verses 1 through 7. Casey, would you read those verses for me, please?
Hear, my children, the instruction of the Father, and give attention to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. Where I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom. And in all your getting, get understanding.
Okay. So what do we take from these verses? Philip says, absorb as much as you can. That's what we need, isn't it? That's right. That's right. Any other thoughts?
The importance of the instruction from the Father.
The importance of the instructions from the Father. Good. He says in verse 3, for I was a son unto my father, tender, the only beloved in the sight of my mother, and he taught me, and he said unto me, let thy heart retain my words. That's good instruction, isn't it? Whether we're talking about a father to a son or we're talking about God to his people, let your heart retain my words. Think about God's words. Retain those words. Think on those words. Don't let them go away from you. Ron?
Keep my commandments and live.
Yes. Yes. Very good. Keep my commandments and live. So here's the purpose of the Proverbs. So as we think about these, stated in different ways, here we see the purpose to take hold of these things, to consider these things, to humble ourselves, to listen carefully to these things. Now, In the rest of chapter 1, we see first in verses 1, 7 through 9, an encouragement to again to godly instruction. So someone read 7 through 9. Who would like to read 7 through 9? Yes, please, Donna, go ahead.
Chapter 1?
Well, chapter 1, yes.
Yeah. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace about thy head, and chains about thy neck.
Okay. So what does that mean, class? A couple things he says there. As Ron has already pointed out, the importance of this verse and a parallel verse to it later in the book, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, or the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. What does that mean to us? What do you think? Sometimes we talk about the word fear being used in two different ways, don't we? Fear being used in two different ways, Mary. What do we mean?
One is to be afraid of, and the other is respect and honor.
Okay, so sometimes it can be used of fear as we think of being afraid of the dark, and sometimes it's used in the fear, sense of honor. Now, should we fear God in both those ways?
Yes.
Yeah, we should fear God in both those ways. There should be some godly fear, because he's going to judge us some days. It should quake us to our boots at times to think about the fact that I'm going to stand before him. But hopefully our fear of God is not just fear of judgment, but also a respect and an honor of who he is. And so the fear of the Lord, why would he say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom? Why would he say the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom or the beginning of knowledge? What does the fear of the Lord have to do? Brenda? He is the creator, isn't he?
So you're aware of it.
Aware of his teaching, aware of what he is saying. If we're fearful of him, if we respect him, then am I going to listen to him? And so the fear of the Lord, having that respect, is the beginning. I start with that respect for him, which brings me to him, which brings me to his feet.
And without that, nothing else really matters.
Yeah.
Without the fear of the Lord, you don't have any wisdom, not true wisdom.
Yeah.
The wisdom from above, it comes from God.
Yeah.
If we don't have that, we don't know what we think we know.
Yeah, exactly. Very good. Very good. So it must begin with that fear of God and that respect for God. And that fear and that respect for God, won't it? It will drive me. If you truly respect someone, assuming we're wanting to please God, assuming we're wanting to do right, assuming we're wanting to be what God wants us to be, say I'm wanting to be a mechanic, and here's this guy over here that's a really great mechanic, and I know he can teach me something, then I'm going to go to him, aren't I? I'm going to go to him and trust him. My respect for him drives me to want to know his knowledge because I want what he can offer. The same thing is true of God. If I'm seeking righteousness and godliness, where's the source? The source is God, and my fear and my respect for him brings me to him. And so the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. My son, hear the instruction of thy father. Forsake not the law of thy mother. They shall be a chaplet of grace under thy head and chains about thy neck. It seems here he is talking about the fact that just as this chaplet of grace to thy head and the chains about thy neck bring honor and glory to you, so the teaching of God brings honor and glory to us, doesn't it? The application of God's wisdom will bring true honor and glory to us in righteous living and in godly living. But let's skip down to verse 20. He does that in the lesson, kind of goes to these middle verses here. And so 20 through 23? Who would like to read for us? 20 through 23. Mary, would you like to read?
City, she uttereth the word, saying, How long,
verse 20, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you, and I will make known my words unto you.
That's good. That's it. So he says, wisdom. He pictures wisdom here being what?
A woman.
He pictures wisdom being a woman because all women are wise. That's the reason. If you don't believe it, just ask my wife. Right? He pictures wisdom. Someone said, well, why does he picture wisdom as being a woman? I don't know. I guess women are wise. I think it's because the word wisdom in the Hebrew is in the feminine. It's a feminine word, and so using that idea, he pictures her, wisdom. Now, but also there's going to be this contrast as we go through Proverbs. There's going to be another woman, not so wise. Who is the other woman, Joan? You were shaking your head. That's why I called on you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Not someone in particular, but we have this. Becky, what are you going to say?
Well, the prostitute is enticing the young man.
Yeah. Later we see the prostitute. So we have this wisdom as a woman, and we have this prostitute trying to entice the young man, and so we have this contrast. Here's two women. Which one are you going to follow? I mean, the young man needs to be cautious of the literal prostitute, but there's a lesson more than just a literal prostitute. His lesson in Proverbs is, here's this wicked person calling out to you. Evil, wickedness, a lack of knowledge, a lack of wisdom in your life, whether it's a prostitute or stealing or whatever sin might be enticing you. You have evil calling out to you, and you have wisdom calling out to you. And here he pictures in verse 20, wisdom cries out in the street. She utters her voice in broad places. She's out there and she's calling to you. Wisdom wants you to hear. Wisdom wants you to listen. How long, O simple ones, will you love simplicity? And scoffers delight in scoffing. And fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you. I will make known my words unto you. And so wisdom is calling out. But also in this chapter, we see someone else calling out. And it comes before in the verses just before this. Who else is calling out to the young man? In this case, it's not a wicked woman. It's like a gang, isn't it? It's like a gang, isn't it? And so, verse 10, beginning, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood. Let us lurk privily for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as Sheol and whole as those who go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Thou shalt cast thy lot among us. We will all have one purse. My son, walk not with them in the way. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood, for in vain is the net spread in the sight of the bird. Those and these lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privily for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy of gain. It taketh away the life of the owner thereof. And so what is the temptation to the young man? What is the temptation of the gang? He asks a question in the questions about making the application to this to modern, and I think the answer is the gang. This is a gang. What we would call a gang. This is a gang. And why would a young man be tempted to join a gang? There may be a whole lot of socioeconomic reasons about that question. But Mary?
He's enticed away.
Yeah. And so there's the enticement. There's the enticement of an easy gain of material things, isn't there? What else might be embedded in this?
Acceptance.
acceptance. We're going to all be together. You're going to be one of us. Verse 14, thou shalt cast thy lot among us, and we shall all have one purse. We're going to be buddies. And they say that's one of the great enticements for young men to join gangs, especially in our culture, where oftentimes their homes are not good, and they don't have a father in the home, and they don't have male bonding in the home, and so they look for someone that they can bond with and be a part of and be with. And so here's this encouragement. So we're going to do all these things. What is God's response, or what is the warning here? He says it a couple places in these verses I just read, starting in verse 10. What does verse 10 say and verse 15 say?
Not to get into them.
Yeah. Consent not. Don't go with them. Verse 15, walk not with them in the way. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet, why? Yeah, they're running to evil. What's the end result? Sounds great. They're running into death. That's what they are. They're running to death. He says, they lay, verse 18 is interesting, they lay wait for their own blood. What does that mean? Yeah, yeah. A lot of animals are smarter than we are at times, aren't they? They. What does it mean? They lay wait for their own blood. They're setting a trap for their own blood, aren't they? Yeah, yeah. So here's the contrast. Don't run after those things, and there'll be more contrasts as we go through the book. But wisdom is crying in the street. Now, the chapter ends in 24 through 33 with the failure in rejecting wisdom. What happens when we reject wisdom? And in these nine chapters, we're going to see more verses like this. So this is not the last time if we don't hit this as deeply as we'd like to in the minute or two that's left, we're going to see many more verses similar to these. But notice in verse 24, he says, because I called and ye have refused, I have stretched my hand and no one has regarded, but ye have set at naught all my counsel and would none of my reproof. I will laugh in the day of your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. When your fear cometh as a storm and your calamity cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you, then will they answer. Then they will call upon me, and I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. What happens if we ignore wisdom? I mean, the short answer is God's not going to listen to us. He says that God's not going to listen to us when we ignore wisdom. But on a practical basis, how is it? Is God just mean? He's just a meanie, and he's not going to listen to us because we didn't listen to him?
Not if we continue down the path that's wrong.
Yeah. In a practical application to this, suppose your friends and your classmates in college say, you need to study, the final's coming. You need to study, the final's coming. You need to study, the final's coming. And you don't heed that wisdom, and you go off and play pool, and you go off and play basketball, and you go off and flirt with the girls. And it comes to the next day, and it's time for the final, and you haven't studied. And now what? It's too late now. You didn't heed wisdom. And you can cry and bemoan and say, I wish I'd have studied, but it's too late. You haven't listened. You didn't listen. And it's the same way when we don't listen to God. If we don't listen and we don't listen and we don't listen, are we going to be prepared to deal with the things that come to us in our lives? No, we're not. And we can bemoan that day and say, God, help me now. I shouldn't have made the mistake. It's too late then. It's too late then.
He uses the words fear, calamity, adversity, and distress.
Yeah.
That's what your life is going to be.
Yeah. If we don't listen to God's wisdom, we're in for a heap of trouble, right?
Okay, we're going to stop there. It's about time. If he hadn't rung the bell, he's going to do so on Thursday. Any final thoughts on this before? I know we didn't get to every verse in the chapter, but any final thoughts anyone would like to share before Steve rings the bell? He's heading to the bell. I can see it. That's right. Very good. Okay, we will turn chapter 2 over to, and lesson 2 over to Brother Brent next Sunday.